Let me not assume you know anything, so we'll just dig in. Hand mnemonics. This may be the single hand mnemonic you have ever encountered in your life, which is used to memorize the months that have 30 days or 31 days, or in the case of February, 28 or 29. And this rhyme, actually, is one of the earliest rhyming mnemonics for this particular knowledge, everyday life. But you might not know that physics, modern-day elementary physics, uses a hand mnemonic when they start out to explain how electric generators, this is a right-hand rule, motion, field, and current, and I've given you some mnemonics on the bottom so you can remember C, F, and thumb, the thrust or, you know, motion. And there's the left-hand rule, very famous left-hand rule, which has then been revised with other mnemonics by de Graaff for electric motors. But I'm also thinking of children's games. We actually teach children a lot with mnemonics. So when I was growing up, we did one where I've noticed that in Europe this isn't common, but here's the church, here's the steeple, open the door, and here's all the people. Which in Europe and in the States is what you commonly see throughout any town or village or city. This one you might not be as familiar with, but it's very familiar with children in northeast China, in Manchuria. And my colleague, Ralph Litch at the University of Zurich, is the one who gave this example to me. And you've probably been spending the past minute or so reading the German explanation. But basically, this is a Chinese house with a kong. And the kong is where the fire is heated underneath it to keep it warm, and most of the family sleeps on it. This is the back of the house, front of the house, and the kitchen. And the idea is a kid, you know, something's in the oven, what's in the oven? And then when the kid goes to smell it, you snap their nose. And I guess, I haven't seen this performed, but I guess it's very amusing for young kids. So, now to my project. So begins, I'm not going to read my slides, by the way, when there's text. So begins an unusual essay titled The Explanation of the Fingers and Palm in a medical text published in 1624. What does the physician Zhang Jiebin mean by this correlation between heaven, earth, and the fingers and palm of man? First, he credits this passage to the 12th century philosopher Xiaoyong, the posthumous patron saint of divination, who we all know very well about from last week's conference that Martin organized. Now, what I should say, I should give you a caveat, that I'm presenting this paper in a very different way than I've done before, in that I really want to get this paper published as a, let's say, a second part to the paper that some of you have read on the earliest examples of hand mnemonics. And I'd like it to be in Asia Major, but we'll see. It might be in the publication of National Central Library that who hosted me. So I'm going to read actually my manuscript, and sometimes I'm going to pull out and show you how these things are done. And what I'd really like from you as an audience is what works and doesn't work. Okay? Or what arguments you're convinced by, what not. Maybe you have some other insights that I haven't had. Please share them in the discussion. All right, so he cites Xiaoyong. It is, in fact, not fabricated, but an authentic citation. Xiaoyong concluded a subsection of his Guanlu Wai Pian with this passage verbatim. This is the passage it's in. It is included in one of the only sections in which he uses corporeal and medical terminology. I guess I'm going ahead a bit too much. And it is noted, right, this is the same passage. Related to this distinction, it's also notably the only passage in which Xiaoyong used the human body to legitimate numerological correspondences and cosmological doctrines. So let me illustrate why I think this is significant by quoting another passage from the same essay on the fingers and palm that physician Zhang wrote over half a century after Xiaoyong's lifetime. This is the Chinese. This is the passage. Take a minute now. Examine the palm of your left hand, opened as if about to catch a ball dropped from above. Everybody? Consider the tip of your middle finger equivalent to the south, your wrist to the north, the right side of your palm to the west, and the left side to the east. Imagine that the fatty cheek of your palm in the lower right side is the northwest, or Ho Gao, as in this passage. Diagonally across the thinner base of your index finger is the southeast, or Qianxia. Okay? Here the physician Zhang projects a geographic conception onto the left palm as if it represented a simple map of China proper. What a Western palm reader would interpret as one's life, career, and love lines, Zhang saw instead riverine lines, possibly even the Yellow, Huai, and Yangtze rivers. These major waterways flow over the mountainous northwestern frontiers, the lower west side, to the aquatic southeastern coast, the upper east side of the palm. The meanings of the topography of the crevices, mounds, and directional associations of the palm clearly reside within the cultural frame of the beholder. Not just a map of China, the Han legitimated as natural an imagined geographic asymmetry of northwest-southeast difference. This northwest-southeast polarity originates in a story about the Titan Gonggong recorded in the Songs of the South from the 4th to 3rd century BCE in a section on heavenly questions. The passage reads as follows. It's very terse. The book of Master Liu preserves the earliest response to this question, and it attributes the imbalance of yin and yang in the world to a fight between Gonggong and a ruler, Zhuan Shu. Here's the passage I'm talking about. Now, John Major succinctly explained this story in cosmological terms as a myth to account for the fact that the ecliptic does not coincide with the celestial equator. Namely, that the path of the sun and approximately the moons and planets around the Earth, i.e. the ecliptic, does not coincide exactly with rotation of the fixed stars, how the equator was defined. The eight pillars in the myth, in this myth, not only explained why the cosmos was fundamentally askew, but also why the celestial pole of the sky's rotation was not directly overhead, and thus why the major rivers of China flowed eastward. Even Xiao Yong mentioned this northwest-southeast dichotomy. Following the chapter that he concluded on the heavenly-earthly resonance of the fingers and palm, for example, he opened a new chapter in Observing Things on the fundamental asymmetry between heaven and earth. Here's his quote. Now, the earliest extant 1330s edition of the Encyclopedia, the broad-ranging record on many matters, some people translate it as forest of matters, visualized this metageographic conception in a rare map of heaven and earth. The anonymous map directly follows the well-known cosmological diagram of the great unity, the Taiji Tu, which is on top. And it's attributed to the famous philosopher Zhou Dunyi. The diagram of the great unity is standard fare in most Chinese civilization and philosophy course, well, at least in the United States. But the picture of heaven and earth that followed it what has been ignored. Yet the second diagram depicts the then-dominant geographic vision of heaven and earth, of earth, rather, as clearly as Zhou Dunyi's diagram summarized the cosmological understanding of the time of heaven. The editor, Chen Yunjing, had good reason to illustrate both in the first passages of his encyclopedia. Read from top to bottom, the diagram of great unity illustrated cosmic metamorphoses from unity to multiplicity. And you go from top, unity, to the two divisions of yin yang, passivity and movement, to the five phases. And then here, this is Quinn and Chen of the generative trigrams that then produce the multiplicity of the world. And alchemy, as Fabrizio knows, it would be the opposite. You go from multiplicity to five to two to unity with the cosmos. The diagram of the two models and two luminaries that follows, however, here, captures a fundamental yin-yang imbalance between heaven and earth. A late 15th century edition of the same encyclopedia devotes a folio to the world map. This expansion of size suggests not only a nicer edition of the encyclopedia, but also that this image continued to be foundational. The seal-like circles, and then I move to this one, the seal-like circles indicate the cardinal directions, north, south, east, and west, around a circular depiction of heaven and earth. Four decorative clouds around the edges indicate the flow of qi through the cosmos. The phrases heaven tilts to the, so I'll move you. Here we go, a little animation. That's the three-legged black crow represent the sun and yang forces, and the immortal rabbit of the moon representing yin sources. And here, heaven is collapsed in the northwest is on one side, and earth is incomplete in the southwest. They flank the circle, kind of like couplets on a moon gate in the Chinese New Year, but also reinforce this visual asymmetry of ocean waters crashing up against mountain peaks. Now I return to Zhang's essay and his opening quotation of Xiaoyong on the cosmic resonance of the fingers and lines of the palm. Both authors use the human body to reinforce preconceived conceptions of heaven and earth. Mary Douglas's argument in Natural Symbols, I know a very old book, but I find it useful in that she argues the body is a useful creation medium of classifications to describe social order and disorder. Zhang went further than Xiaoyong's generalization that the patterns of heaven and earth are all within the palm by relating its shape and lines to the major geographic features of the Chinese Empire. He thus employed the palm to reinforce a yin-yang simplification of much more complex and empire-wide geographic variation. So following Douglas, I call this first function of the hand a manual creation medium. However, the human hand in these examples not only creates meaning, but also legitimates certain interpretations of meaning as basic truths. This reverse process of conceptual corporealization could therefore be called a manual legitimation medium. Yeah, that's about as far as I'm going to go on jargon, but this was also very central to microcosm and macrocosm models. Zhang Jiabin's Ming conception of the palm as microcosm of Chinese geography is in this way comparable to the early Han vision of numerological correspondences between parts of the body and the Earth's geography, recorded in the earliest medical classic, The Inner Canon of the Yellow Emperor, which was published, put together, compiled in the first century BCE by anonymous authors and multiple authors. In both cases, physicians deployed numerological correspondence between parts of the human body and earth to reinforce a cultural conception of how the world was structured and how the micro-macrocosm relationship functioned. Hand mnemonics. Now, indulge me. Place your left thumb on the crease of your ring finger. That is the first location, one, zi. Then on the bottom of the middle finger, that's the second position, cho. And the third position, yin. The fourth position, mao. The fifth position, chen. Sixth, si. Around your fingers clockwise, wu, wei, shen, you, shu, hai. So the second function of the hand I'm going to talk about is to remember things. I call it manual mnemonics or hand mnemonics. Zhang, for example, used the same duodecimal hand mnemonic as a basis to summarize a numerological doctrine that predicted epidemics according to the Chinese sexagenary or 60-year cycle. He similarly used a six-position hand mnemonic to facilitate mastery of the same system of medical numerology related to pulse reading. This method helped the physician determine the difference between normal seasonal and aberrant pulses in a patient. I will return to these examples at the end of my talk and just talk about the first one here. By that time, you'll be ready for it, I think. So in the following paper, I make four arguments based on Zhang's hand mnemonics. First, his medical predecessor was the 12th century Northern Song imperial physician, Liu Wenshu. Liu was the first to publish diagrams of medical hand mnemonics and his illustrated version of the inner canon basic questions, which he presented to the emperor in 1099. And my version here is the earliest extant version that's in the Beijing Tushuguan or library, central library from 1339. So admittedly, you know, over 100 years later, 140 years later. So Catherine Despurs argued convincingly that the numerology of his 12th century contemporaries, Xiaoyong and Zhou Dunyi, influenced his medical numerology. So secondly, I show that Zhang drew direct inspiration not only from Xiaoyong in his use of the first function of the hand discussed, that is this manual creation medium, manual legitimation medium of the microcosm macrocosm model, but also from a popular practice of what I define as manual mancy. Okay. Thirdly, and related to the second point, his hand mnemonics are a rare textual trace in an elite medical text of a wide range of manual divination practices recorded in the vernacular literature. What I mean by vernacular literature are household encyclopedias, almanacs, medical primers, and such genres of texts that were written in a simpler Chinese, often punctuated with rhyming schemes, and for a broader audience than just the literati class. These sources circulated from at least the 1330s, at least my earliest editions for this topic, and during the late 16th and early 17th centuries when Zhang Jiebin lived. Finally, the fourth point is that he integrated a kinesthetic dimension of memorization practices with the more commonly known auditory, that is, rhyming and versification, and visual, diagrams, tables, etc., including maps, mnemonic techniques. Most scholars have emphasized either versification or visualization so far in Chinese arts of memory. My contribution to this existing scholarship is to show how the body was used to memorize, especially the hand, and how the tactile dimension worked together with auditory and visual arts of memory. So, this is a diagram that opens the 1099 book of Liu Wenshu. You have six climatic, you read it from the center moving out. And this illustrates to you, I don't expect you to remember any of this, but just what was in the mind of the person memorizing. So it really interests me about hand mnemonics as a heuristic device for this project, is that it's not just intellectual history. I mean, it's a way of getting into the mind of people and what they thought was important enough to memorize. But there is a social context in which that knowledge, memorized knowledge, was valorized. It wouldn't have been acceptable to pull out a text. They really need to know it by heart. And that's what interests me, that relationship between memorized knowledge and the intellect, and then how it was performed or carried out or utilized. So you have six climatic qi, six governing qi, six pairs of earthly branches that branch out from that, six govern heaven stages, six annual steps of qi, six being very important because it's six ways of dividing up the year into 60 days, 18 seasonal transition within any given year, and 24 seasonal nodes. At the very end, these are these 12 earthly branches. Okay, next. My article on hand mnemonics focused on the two examples in Liu Wenshu's book. Here's the first one on 12 branches. And here's the six governing qi. He doesn't even bother to write the 12 earthly branches because at that time it was just assumed basic knowledge. You would know it. And in here, he's got Tai Yin, Xiao Yang, which is are the Chinese names. I won't read them, going around the finger in that order for the six governing qi. And this is very interesting because this hand mnemonic transmitted to Korea in the 1613 text, and you'll see in the bottom left-hand side how they did write in the 12 earthly branches because they couldn't assume that people reading the text would know where they were located on the hand, as Liu Wenshu could when he first published his text. All right, so this is a 20th century edition of it. I use it because I think it's clearer to understand, read it. I'm going to talk you through it again. So Zi starts, we've already done this exercise once, and you start with Zi at the base of your ring finger, and you move clockwise around till you end at high at the base of your pinky finger. Now, what interests me is that the hands are directly related to other tu or diagrams in these medical texts, actually in all the texts you'll find. I'll show this to you later. And this is what's written on the hand is directly related to this particular chart. Just another way of organizing it. Here are the 10 stems, another way of marking time in ancient China. And he again starts at the base of the ring finger, moves around clockwise, ending at the right above the jaw, I think at gui, right above the joint of your ring finger. Now, why is this important? Let me just show you. He relates alternating yin and yang, five phases, 10 heavenly stems together. All right, here we are. Okay. Now, I use some color here so you can see how it works. You've got the phase earth correlated to two of the stems, and then metal and water. This is in the production cycle, wood, and then fire. And you can see directly how the hand and the circle diagrams relate to each other. Okay. These medical hand mnemonics helped physicians memorize a medical doctrine called Wu Yun Liu Qi, or five circulatory phases and six climatic configurations of qi. The doctrine was often referred to simply in Chinese as Yun Qi and in English phase energetics. Based on a 60-year cycle divided into five periods of 12 years each, phase energetics formalized in medical practice the relationship between the macroclimate of the cosmos and the microclimate of the human body. Now, the locus classicus of phase energetic doctrines is in seven chapters of the Inner Canon of the Yellow Emperor, Basic Questions, which is the theoretical foundation of Chinese medicine. Now, although this text was compiled anonymously by various authors during the first century BCE, scholars have known for quite a long time that these seven chapters were interpolated later in the 8th century. They're not original to nearly a millennium later. Even Chinese scholars in the Qing period are aware of this. Phase energetics doctrine, however, did not gain prominence until the end of the 11th century with the completion of Liu Wenxu's treatise. Now, just to go back, people know the 60-year cycle, know how it works, but I'm not assuming all of you know this. I just want to give you a little primer. The heavenly stems are on the left and the earthly branches are on the right. And because the 10 of the heavenly stems end with the 10th of the earthly branches on the second time around, they have to shift it over. And this goes five times around. So you get a unique combination of two stems and branches 60 times by doing this. And this 60-year cycle is what they're memorizing on their hands. That's why it's important to know the order of the 12 branches and the 10 stems, because they were figuring out the order of these 60. This 60-year cycle then is summarized in this way, not my English chart, but this way. So you have the branches here, the stems here, and I mark them also red here. Two pairs of branches correlated with the celestial stems, and then in each case, it's a kind of medical prognosis because they're trying to determine what years are auspicious or inauspicious in terms of epidemics. Okay, now I turn to my second point about the influence of a broader practice of manual mancy on Zhang's medical arts of memory. In his explanation of the fingers and the palm essay, he mentioned inspiration from seven types of practices that he credited to yin yang, or divination specialists. Here they are. Chinese used their hands to memorize a wide range of items, concepts, and relations that fell into groups of 6, 8, 9, 10, 12, and even more, such as the examples physician Zhang mentioned. And all of the concepts related to these seven types, in fact, related to some form of fate prediction. The first example of manual mancy I found is of the first one he mentioned of the 12 branches. And it was published in the early sextant 1325 Japanese edition of the famous Northern Song Encyclopedia, the broad-ranging record on many matters. Now, the earliest edition connects the 12 earthly branches to the 12 zodiac animals. So now you can all figure out what zodiac animal you are. By what zodiac animal you are, and linking it to the branches and the year you were born in, you can also figure out how other people, what animals they are, depending on what year you were born in, and things like that. It's just marvelous once you memorize it. All right, so then the same edition also makes a correlation to 12 auspicious and inauspicious stars here. Okay, so what's important to note here is that the hand here is also here, but it's just represented in a different way. And there's a year of the rat, just as orient you. And here's another example from a later edition from the 15th century that goes even further to connect the same duodecimal system with the 28 lodges. And again, it operates in a clockwise logic. In all three cases, these connections are used to aid in simple practice of fate prediction according to units of time. In addition, one sees clearly how here the hand mnemonic directly relates to the circle and square diagrams. All seven of the yin-yang specialist methods Zhang mentioned were later published together in a late 15th century almanac. The prolific publisher, Sheng Zhongli, published this almanac sometime in the 1470s. I got this copy from the National Central Library in Taiwan. And although only two of the 13 mnemonics actually use a hand diagram to illustrate them, as with the earlier example of the 12 branches, the square diagrams of the 12 branches, the magic square, the various arrangements of the 8 trigrams also represented hand mnemonics. So here's a way of marking the same thing, but this way they can add text to tell the reader what they should memorize under each one of these numerical rubrics. Here we have an orientation of the magic square, each adding up to 15. And then again here we have the 8 trigrams commonly used in Chinese fate prediction practices. And here's another one as well. All right, now I end with this one on the Liu Ren, another very common form of fate prediction. And I'd like to teach you again how to do this, the six Ren system, if you will indulge me. But first I want to let me just explain to you how the texts work. So they explain the orientation of the characters on the hand and how this works, how you move around the hand, starting here at this location. And then they give what each da'an is here, which each one of the six, I've listed them on the top, mean. Okay, so that's how the almanac works. Now come to this. This is in your handout too. So, in August 2001, I was preparing for a conference in Paris on two diagrams, which Professor Lochner attended as well, and in fact published a wonderful article on two and used in argument, these diagrams, and actually the architectural forms. And I was preparing to talk about the circle and square diagrams, especially the ones that were used for predicting epidemics, the ones that were circulated actually in the 16th century. And it turns out that Zhang Jiabin's book had the most illustrations. So I was focusing on his book published in 1624. And waiting for my friend Zhang Jiafeng, I actually was driving to pick her up at the airport. She's at National Taiwan University, and my exhaust pipe collapsed. So I had to leave the car in Princeton. I had to go back home. It was very terrible. I thought, she wouldn't get in until really late. And so it was 2 o'clock, I thought, oh, she gets in at 2, the bus leaves at 2:30, hopefully she calls me in 15 minutes. She called at 2:10. And I said, wonderful, you'll get the bus, I'll be at the station, you know, just take an hour, I'll see you, you know, shortly. The next day we were sitting together at the guest library in Princeton, and I was working on my Paris project and reading Zhang Jiabin's illustrations and trying to figure out what he was talking about in this phase energetics theory. And I said to her, why did you think to call me so quickly? I thought it was strange. I said to her, I would have waited at least a half an hour. I would have waited an hour knowing the traffic in Newark and New York. And she said, well, as soon as I got off the plane, I did a hand calculation, I landed here. So I knew that there was trouble, but I also knew that it wasn't an accident, so I decided to call you. And I said, what? Well, I use a lunar calendar, of course, and it was the 6th, it wasn't August 13th, it was 6th month, the 24th day, and to make it individual, I always choose the first character that comes to mind and the number of strokes in that character to get the three numbers. And I said, what? So then she wrote this post-it for me, which I have reproduced for you and given you as a handout. And it's the same system that you found in, that I ended the section on Shengzongming's almanac. Okay. This is her hand. She uses her right hand. She's always a little different. Most people use their left hand. In fact, most all the illustrations I found on Liu Wen are on the left hand. So let's say you weren't feeling well before you came here. You weren't sure, you know, somewhere between 15 and 17, you weren't sure about coming. A lot of things, like Professor Lochner, I can understand. He had a lot of things on his plate today. So maybe he was wondering, but he is forced to because he had introduced me. Okay, so you get three numbers. The lunar month one, the day, which is today is the ninth day of the lunar month, okay? And then the hour, the Shen hour, is nine. So you, using those numbers, you start here, and you go one, okay? And then you repeat on the same place you landed. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I've done some shorthand. You can take out seven every time with big numbers. And then one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Small fortune, good luck. It won't, if you were feeling bad, it's okay. You'll wake up in the morning, you'll feel better. So that's how it works. It's very simple, really. And my friend, you know, tailors it to herself with this idea that you can go with the first character that comes to mind, but then you have six options for making a decision. What's the best course? Like calling your friend to see if she's had an accident or something, see if she should take a taxi or a bus, as she did. Now, what I want to give you a sense of is a larger picture in which Zhang Jiebin was living in terms of the kinds of hand mnemonics that were circulating at the time that I've known about. And I give you some examples. And this one is very famous, two hand mnemonics for Sima Guang's five sounds and 36 phonetic finals. Okay. This one from the Taoist canon having to do with constellations. This one from mathematics having to do with calculations, often having to do with measuring rice and fields and things like that, which Andrea knows about. And he even published an edition of Liu Wenxu's medical books with these hand mnemonics in the same decade as his almanac. So I have found one medical text dated to 1515 and also a manuscript dated to 1608 that used medical hand mnemonics in ways differently from Liu and later Zhang. In fact, the 1608 manuscript, The Seal Method for Cold Damage, integrates manual mancy with medical prognostication. This method is comparable to the six Ren method I just introduced to you, in that it relies on three numbers, the month, day, and hour of the onset of the illness. And I just use this here to show you how the hand is very roughly drawn, very clearly an example of vernacular knowledge that I'm interested in, and above it are the eight trigrams. Here's another way that these duodecimal system is used and charted out. And here's just a kind of modern explanation of how this particular author used the method. So the three numbers are the month, the day, the hour of the onset of illness, which I just used with you for you, to determine what type of yin and yang pattern the patient is likely to have and prescribe the appropriate formula. After the 15th century expansion in publishing, illustrations of manual mancy and hand mnemonics appear in texts from most domains of Chinese knowledge: numerological astrology, palmistry, geomancy, divination, mathematics, philosophy, music, poetry, the military, and the law. I've just given you a few examples. Priests called up astral spirits through locations on their hands, according to the Taoist canon. In the novel, Romance of the Three Kingdoms, the famous general Zhuge Liang prognosticated on his hands before going into battle. And even the peach blossom girl in the Ming-era vernacular novel, Tong Su Xiao Shuo, got the upper hand, pun intended, against her nemesis, Zhou Gong, through finger calculations. And I'm referring to the lecture Vincent Durand Dastas gave here over 2 years ago, right here, I think. I don't know if it was right here, November 2010. So all of these examples of manual mancy, medical prognosis, and hand mnemonics in elite and vernacular sources were reprinted in various forms in the early 17th century when physician Zhang applied them to medical arts of memory.
Now finally we return to what we know about the man, Jiang Jiabing. Originally from the southwestern province of Sichuan, the family moved to modern-day Shaoxing in Zhejiang province of central China when his father was posted as a guard commander. At 13, he went to Beijing with his father on official business and studied there for the first time with a local physician. After leading a rather peripatetic life, sometime in the 1620s, well into his 60s, he returned south to live in his native Zhejiang. And it was in 1624 that he found a publisher in Suzhou to publish his innovative reorganization of chapters in the Neijing, or the Inner Canon, this classical Chinese medical text from the first century. He issued this in the same year along with an accompanying second volume of diagrams, this one that's featured here, same one I was working on in 2001. The two volumes were simply titled Leijing, or the classified canon, and he assumes people would know it was the Neijing, or Inner Canon, and that Leijing Tui, the illustrations and commentary on the classified inner canon. For the purpose of this article, there are two important aspects of Zhang's reorganization of and illustrations for the inner canon. First, he followed a path similar to Liu Wenshu's earlier 12th century model, the one that my Asia major article is based on, by promoting the same new phase energetics doctrines of the chapters interpolated earlier in the 8th century. He similarly used circle, square, and hand diagrams to summarize and facilitate mastery of the complex systems of correspondence and doctrines of phase energetics. Furthermore, like Liu Wenshu, he was a literate medical scholar who integrated medicine into the broader philosophical debates of his socio-political milieu. Instead of being an imperial physician who had to present his medical scholarship to the emperor for approval and patronage, however, Zhang could take advantage of the Ming boom in medical publishing, submit his work directly to a private publisher, and count on a ready audience to purchase his medical text. Now, the issue regarding the inner canon currently debated during his time had also changed in the intervening half century between him and Liu. The problem was not so much about the authenticity of chapters of the Neijing dealing with phase energetics, but rather the limitations of the inner canon itself for dealing with contemporary illnesses and regional variations in morbidity. At this time, you have a lot of medical cases being published, people relying on their own experience and thinking the canon is hard to read and isn't really useful. So influenced by this contemporary scholarship in Han learning, and as well as the critiques of inner canon, he sought to recover the authentic texts of Chinese antiquity from later corruptions. So this Han learning, physicians responded to these criticisms by applying philological methods to separate original Han passages of the inner canon from later editions and revisions, like these phase energetics doctrines. Zhang Jiabing supported the relevance of the inner canon for present medical practice, and he criticized the influential physicians of the previous Jin and Yuan dynasties who, he thought, oversimplified it and promoted their own biased perspectives. But in contrast to his contemporaries, he sought a solution to the controversy through recovery of the original passages and structure of the inner canon. But he took the position that revering the inner canon differed significantly from rigidly adhering to it. So he focuses instead on a completely new reorganization of the Neijing, or the inner canon, to make it easier for physicians to learn his doctrines and use it as a reference in clinical practice. He had a ready audience among physicians writing on the inner canon in South China, and literate men and scholarly doctors purchasing texts on this genre, I Ching, or medical canon. Both of these factors contributed to the significant number of titles published in this medical genre in the 16th and 17th century when he lived. So, I just made those arguments. Don't need to repeat them. So, where did he live? Here, in Zhejiang. Furthermore, Zhejiang province, where Zhang grew up and later returned to practice medicine, was the regional focus during the same time of the surge in publications in the inner canon. Zhang's text was just one of 23 new Ming medical texts on the inner canon, written by fellow Zhejiang physicians. Ming physicians from Jiangsu province, by contrast, published just 10 new texts on the inner canon, and that was the most of any other province in the area, in all of China at the time. The emphasis among physicians in the urban centers of Hangzhou and Shaoxing of Zhejiang province when Zhang was practicing medicine was on the classical medical canons of antiquity, especially the inner canon. And monographs on phase energetics also appeared as one of the new subgenres in medicine and were dominantly written by physicians in Zhejiang and also Jiangsu province. These new authors on phase energetics wrote on the popularity of revised editions of the inner canon and promoted their books as responses to contemporary epidemics and other illnesses due to external factors. Well ensconced in the Zhejiang medical community, Zhang was a key player in these contemporary debates on the inner canon. He was an influential author in the attempt among physicians in his region to recast the inner canon for the current age. His use of medical hand mnemonics must therefore be understood within this broader intellectual, cultural, regional context. Hand mnemonic one. Although Zhang Jiebin clearly drew inspiration for his two medical hand mnemonics from a popular cultural practice of using the hand for divining, calculating, and recalling, his adoption of this practice was intended for other physicians and medical scholars rather than the average educated gentleman. Even a medical apprentice would have difficulty understanding what was written on the hands without the guidance of a master. The first hand diagram in Zhang's text, for example, illustrates how hand mnemonics in Chinese medicine relied on tacit knowledge within the physician's mind. The characters are shorthand for several layers of associations. And to understand this diagram, the text explains that the physician must first recognize that each single character represents, at the first level, the first of a two-character term. The two-character terms refer to one of the three yin or three yang steps of qi that cycle through an ordinary or orderly annual sequence of climatic change governed either by heavenly forces on one side, yang forces from the south, or by earthly forces, yin forces from the north. The south is called govern heaven, and the north forces are called in the source. These three yin and three yang steps of qi are the same six governing qi first introduced in Liu Wenxu's 12 earthly branches from 1099, his hand mnemonic. So while moving the thumb clockwise around the circumference of his or her palm, the physician must have in mind the duodecimal cycle of earthly branches. As a point of departure, Zhang did not accept arguments among his contemporaries that seven of these chapters of the Nanjing were later interpretations. In fact, 64 of the diagrams, in addition to this hand mnemonic, are used to illustrate phase energetics. He chose to employ medical hand mnemonics, in fact, to illustrate the two most complex phase energetics doctrines. This govern heaven and in the source, and southern and northern governance. Practitioners would also have to know that the earthly branches pair with each other in a specific order that moves diagonally across and clockwise around the fingers in the following way. Okay, so Xiao Yin are the six governing forces, and they repeat again. Xiao Yin, Tai Yin, Xiao Yang, and then continues Yangming, Taiyang, and Jueyin with the other remaining characters. Liu Wenxu's first diagram of seven concentric circles would also be tacit knowledge within their mind. The innermost band of the six steps of qi corresponds to the six pairs of earthly branches in exactly the same order. Practitioners could then readily see the Xiao Yin, for example, being located, I guess it's better I keep that there, the Xiao Yin, for example, being located in the Zi Wu positions. So Zi is here and Wu here, and then Cho Wei that way around. The same pattern proceeds around the circumference of the fingers. And the mnemonic dimension of the 1624 hand diagram thus extends back to the first circle diagram with which Liu Wenxu chose to begin his 1099 text. So that was a big argument one. In the passage accompanying this hand diagram, Zhang first summarizes the doctrine of six steps of qi according to the paired concepts of the half of the year dominated by southern forces, govern heaven, and the half year of the year ruled by the northern forces of earth or in the source. The phase energetics doctrine of govern heaven and in the source divides the year into two major yin and yang divisions that are dominantly governed by either heavenly or earthly forces. So what he did, what's interesting, is he took advantage of the natural joint segments of the palm side of the fingers to arrange these divisions in a specific circular sequence in one complete revolution in the palm. You can, everything is within your grasp, as you see here. And that's the origin of my title. Since the diagram alone could not convey the method, Zhang Jiebin described the technique in the essay accompanying the image. Now, I just give you the translation here so you can see, you know, what inspired my title of my talk and hopefully the book, but you never know with publishers. Go with the title you'd like. Zhang then described in detail the mnemonic function of the first character of the two character terms for the governing qi that I just explained to you that go around the hand, and match them directly with the earthly branches. Now, all I want you to do is notice here how he says all that's important is to remember the six characters, and everything else can be pegged on them. Without the aid of the diagram, the hand diagram, the meaning of these scriptions are just incomprehensible. This is especially true since comprehension requires tacit knowledge of how the sequence of the 12 branches were conventionally written on the joints of the fingers and other domains of vernacular knowledge. Furthermore, the detailed description in the passage of what is written on the natural division of the palm and how to move through them suggests that Zhang Jiebin sought not merely comprehension, but also application of these doctrines in clinical practice, thus memorized knowledge. You wouldn't need a text to refer to. The most significant statement in this passage concludes the first paragraph, within one revolution in the palm, understanding the six qi is within one's grasp. This conclusion succinctly expresses the simultaneous functions of the hand as both mnemonic for doctrines about the macrocosm and as corporeal microcosm, legitimating these same doctrines. Conclusion. By borrowing these practices from the realm, and then these are the doctrines memorized, but I think you've had enough of that. Okay. And then this is how that hand diagram actually matches with this circle diagram. You can see how the text relates to the images. Okay. By borrowing these practices from the realm of vernacular knowledge to promote his comparably esoteric medical doctrines, Zhang bridged the two realms of popular and elite knowledge. In addition to this kinesthetic type of mnemonic, he also borrowed auditory and visual forms, such as versification, didn't talk much about that, but he does use that, rhyming mnemonics, and visualization, such as the drawings of the two inscribed hands, but also the circles and the squares and tables that similarly reordered medical knowledge to improve its mastery. To facilitate the memorization of arguably the most difficult doctrines in classical Chinese medicine, Zhang thus deployed the three main ways people learn: visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. To summarize, moving from Zhang Jiebin's 1624 explanation on the fingers and the palm out to his broader social and intellectual times, I've argued that he borrowed three widespread functions of the hand. Hand as both a creation medium and legitimation medium within a macrocosm-microcosm model of reasoning, as examples I give here, I won't reiterate, as a hand mnemonic for memorizing arguably the most complex phase energetic doctrines in traditional Chinese medicine, and three, that he borrowed practices from the manual mantic arts to create his medical arts of memory. And in response to criticisms of the inner canon as limited and phase energetics doctrines as interpolated, he returned back to the 12th century imperial physician Liu Wenshu and cosmologist Xiao Yong for rhetorical, visual, and corporeal strategies to represent the inner canon of antiquity as relevant for his times. Thank you.